Chapter 16. The FBI takes charge. The interstate, normally a bustling artery through Houston, was now a macabre cluster of flashing lights and paralyzed traffic. Amidst the chaos, Violet found herself adorned with handcuffs and wearing a blanket around her waist. Her world had been turned upside down, but she was safe and sound, and Sam had also likely been rescued. As she stood beside a police cruiser, she began to recount the extraordinary events that had transpired that morning. A captive audience of uniformed officers listened intently. The officers' faces, showing a mixture of fascination and skepticism, listened with a blend of awe and disbelief. Meanwhile, back at the warehouse on Prairie Road, a storm of activity was brewing. News of what had taken place there had swept through Houston's police and fire departments like wildfire. A formidable contingent of officers had already descended upon the warehouse, accompanied by specialized SWAT and forensic teams, with more detectives en route. In addition, Dwayne Scott and his FBI team had also arrived in their helicopter. The results of what happened there was evident, but how it happened was still a mystery. In the shadow of the Alamo Center bombing, law enforcement agencies across Texas had been on high alert, extra sensitive to potential threats. Consequently, Violet's seemingly fantastical account was granted a degree of credibility, which might otherwise have been dismissed as the ravings of a distraught woman. Attempting to reason with the officers, Violet began again, saying, "Listen carefully, everyone. I want you to think about what I'm saying. That ambulance down there in that parking lot was blown to smithereens." Her voice was steady, and with her eyes fixed on the faces of the officers as she explained, "It's not because I hit the gas tank with a bullet, because a bullet hitting a gas tank would not explode like that." Some of the officers nodded with agreement as she continued. "The ambulance had a suicide vest inside, a vest that detonated when I put a bullet into it. Essentially, the vest was a bomb." What Violet was saying was making sense. Gradually, the officers began to think that perhaps Violet's story may have some credibility to it. Then she added, "That bomb was put into the ambulance at a warehouse on Prairie Road, where I was being held captive." Given the rapid and chaotic unfolding of events that morning, the officers on the interstate were largely in the dark about the catastrophe at the Prairie Road warehouse. Just as the officers were about to place Violet in a squad car, a senior officer approached the group. His authoritative presence immediately commanded everyone's attention. He announced, "We have orders to transport Violet Wheeler to 1023 Prairie Road, that's in West Houston," his voice carrying a tone of finality. The orders gave credibility to Violet's story, and the officers exchanged puzzled glances. The senior officer, anticipating their questions, elaborated, "She is to remain securely handcuffed, with her feet additionally restrained with flex cuffs. She is to be placed between two officers in the back seat of a squad car. Furthermore, I want another squad car with two officers to follow closely behind as an escort. Until we receive further instructions, she is to be considered a high-risk suspect." A brief pause followed, and then he added, "There's a mobile command center already established at this address on Prairie Road. Your objective is to take her to the command center." It was very unusual for the police to transport a suspect to anywhere other than to the holding facility at a police station. Clearly, someone of considerable influence had intervened to have Violet transported back to the Prairie Road warehouse. On the way to the warehouse, Violet began to worry about Sam, and said to the other officers, "There's a warehouse at that address we're heading to. I left my partner there, another EMT, and he had a perforated gunshot wound in his leg. Do any of you know if he's been taken to the hospital?" Nobody in the police car knew anything specifically about Sam. But one officer replied, "We don't know for sure why we are taking you to Prairie Road, we're just following orders." Then he added, "What I do know is that I heard on the radio that there are a lot of officers already there, and apparently a mobile command center too. Something really big must have happened there." As they approached the warehouse, they could see a news helicopter circling overhead, and the road leading to the building had been transformed into a staging ground. Along the sides of the road were all types of emergency response personnel and their vehicles. Collectively, they formed a kaleidoscope of flashing lights. Some of the police on site had set up a roadblock to isolate the warehouse from any traffic, and all civilian cars and news media were being turned around. The officer driving the police car excitedly said, "Wow, Something really big did happen here. The two officers sitting next to Violet gave her a funny look, as if to say, her story might be true, and here we are sitting here next to a potentially very dangerous woman. Violet just shrugged her shoulders and smiled. Only the police car with Violet inside was permitted to proceed past the roadblock to the warehouse. After Violet's 911 call, it didn't take long for the warehouse to be swarming with police personnel, and the FBI too. Already in the building's parking lot, along with numerous police cruisers, were large support vehicles, the Houston Police Bomb Squad, Houston SWAT Team Vehicle, and the Mobile Police Command Center. In an open field adjacent to the building, sat an FBI helicopter. The entire area was alive with people on the move. With Violet still restrained wearing cuffs, she was escorted to the command center by the officers she was traveling with. Just as they were about to enter the command center, FBI Special Agent Dwayne Scott came walking out, flanked by a couple of other FBI agents. Surprised to see Violet so soon, with a big smile, Dwayne jokingly said, "Hey Violet, I'm glad you could make it." Violet replied, "Well, Dwayne, I thought it would be nice to come here, and we could all hang out together for a while. As you can see, I'm ready to do cartwheels." Dwayne showed his identification to the officers escorting Violet, and said, "I'm FBI Special Agent Dwayne Scott. Violet is one of us, one of the good guys. You can remove these handcuffs. I'll take charge of her from here." The officers were reluctant to release her, so Dwayne added, "I'm the one who directed her to be brought here. That's why you're here, to bring her here to me." The officers shared glances with each other, and then with a nod, they relented and freed Violet. Dwayne thanked the officers as they walked back to their squad car. Violet was quick to ask, "Where's my partner, Samuel Harris? Has he been taken to a hospital?" "Yes, he has," Dwayne answered. "Sam is okay, and he has been taken to the Houston Healthcare Center, about a 20-minute drive from here. He's in good hands." Then he added, "But before he left, he gave me a quick rundown on everything that happened here, including your fancy dance that got things moving. He also told me about Chang and the Calvary Christian Center." Violet was a little embarrassed about Dwayne's dance comment, but relieved and replied, "Good, I've been worried about him." Dwayne continued, "I don't understand how you did it, but somehow, you single-handedly took on an entire heavily armed terror cell." With a serious and profound look on his face, he reached out to shake Violet's hand. "Violet, I think you saved thousands of lives here today. Thank you so very much, you're a hero." Violet humbly replied with a smile, "I think God was looking out for his children today." "That's for sure," agreed Dwayne. After pausing for a moment to let his compliment to Violet sink in, Dwayne didn't waste any more time with pleasantries. He turned to the other FBI agents and said, "Sarah, Henry, I need for you two to wait right here. I've got to go talk with Violet in private." Turning to Violet, Dwayne was now serious and back to business. "Violet, please come with me, we've got to talk." Dwayne hurried Violet off toward a secluded corner of the parking lot, where they could talk in private. As they walked, Dwayne glanced at Violet and the blanket wrapped around her waist and legs, and he asked, "What happened to your pants?" Violet replied, "The terrorists took them from me. I saw them inside earlier when I was tending to Sam, and, well, my pants are covered in blood." With a sense of protectiveness, Dwayne stopped and yelled back to his fellow agents, waving with his hand to come. "Just Sarah, come here." Once Sarah got there, Dwayne issued his orders. "Sarah, I need for you to find Violet a pair of pants. I don't care what it takes, but she needs a pair of pants, fast." Sarah asked Violet, "What size do you wear?" Violet glanced over at Dwayne, then went over to Sarah and discreetly whispered her pant size into her ear. Violet was too modest to say her pant size in front of Dwayne. Sarah smiled and gave Dwayne a nod, then remarked, "I'm on it, sir." As Sarah hurried away, Dwayne and Violet continued walking toward the corner of the parking lot. Violet commented, "Thank you, Dwayne, I appreciate that." There was a brief moment of levity with her modesty, amid the seriousness of the situation that caught Dwayne off guard. He chuckled, then remarked, "So, you don't have a problem with wiping out an entire terror cell, but you're shy about divulging your pants size." Both of them laughed a little. Once they stopped walking, Dwayne turned to Violet, saying, "Violet, I've got a problem." She listened close as he continued, Actually, we both have a problem. What happened here at this warehouse this morning, and the explosion at the Calvary Christian Center, are going to make big news, not just here in America, but all over the world. It's going to be a very big deal. The FBI is already in charge of this investigation, with the added help of the Houston police. Dwayne paused for a moment, trying to find the right words to say. Then he added, "If it comes out that Violet Wheeler wiped out 11 terrorists, every bad guy in the world is going to know who you are, find out where you live, and they will likely try to take revenge against you, and possibly, anyone else that is close to you." Violet interrupted, "Well, Dwayne, it's not like I'm keeping score. But if you count the guy that I blew up at the church, I think that makes 12 terrorists." "Okay," Dwayne replied with a chuckle, 12 terrorists, what I'm getting at, if you worked for me at the FBI, I could report you as an undercover agent, and we could keep your identity a secret." Then Dwayne revealed, "Since I talked to you at the firehouse, I have had a long conversation with Colonel Robinson, your former direct supervisor at Ramstein Air Base. He told me all about your so-called special talents." Dwayne paused for a moment then continued, "Violet, those are exactly the kind of special talents I need on my team." Violet replied with an inquisitive raised eyebrow, "Are you offering me a job?" "Yes, I am," Dwayne precisely answered. Then he added, "I hunt terrorists, that's all my team does. Hopefully, we can stop them before they act. Today you saved the lives of thousands of people, because you stopped the terrorists from being able to carry out their terror plots. You didn't just save lives, think of the heartbreak you spared all their families." Violet paused to consider what Dwayne was saying. It's possible that joining Dwayne's team could be her calling. What Dwayne said about the families left behind deeply touched Violet. She had intimate experience with helping Dave's family get through his death. Their grieving, that she had witnessed firsthand, and all the generational suffering within his family. All of it caused by a vicious suicide bomber. Remembering the sights and sounds of that night at the Alamo Center, all of these memories had been haunting Violet every day, over and over. The sound of the continuous high-pitched whine of hundreds of people crying and calling for help, and the distinct smell of burned explosives in the air. It was too late to save Dave and spare his family. But she was thinking, joining Dwayne's team could prevent other fellow Americans from suffering Dave's fate, and the possibility of preventing the agony and heartache suffered by countless loved ones and friends left behind. Joining Dwayne's team seemed to be a golden opportunity for her to make a very positive difference, and also, put her special talents to maximum use. Violet turned to Dwayne and asked, "Can you do something for me, like right now?" She turned and pointed to Carlos still hanging from the overhead door. "That's all that's left of Carlos. I hung him from that door using my husband's necklace. I need that necklace back. That necklace means the world to me." Just then, the FBI helicopter took off and Dwayne was puzzled. He wondered and said out loud, "Where's my helicopter going?" as he watched it fly away. Dwayne turned back to Violet and compassionately said, "I know about your husband and how he died. He was a patriot and a hero, and I stand with patriot heroes." Dwayne knew what Violet wanted, and she didn't have to ask further. Dwayne looked over at the other agent still waiting by the command center, and yelled out, "Hey Henry, come here," waving him over. After Henry came over, Dwayne pointed to Carlos, saying, "See what's left of that guy? He's hanging there, from Violet's necklace. I need for you to get that necklace, clean it off, put it in a plastic bag, and give it to Violet, right away." With an unsure look, Henry asked, "Won't it be a problem if I take him down before the entire crime scene is fully investigated?" Dwayne answered, "I know for certain that we already have hundreds of photos of that man hanging from the door. He has already been exceptionally well documented, so don't worry about it. Plus, that guy hanging from the door won't be going to trial. Feel free to take more photos as you pull him down. I'm authorizing you to go get that necklace and give it to Violet." Then Dwayne gestured with a sweeping wave of his arm, and added, "This entire area is full of people that can help you. Get whatever help you need, and get the job done. Trust me, it's important." Henry was apprehensive, but he relented, "Yes, sir, I'll get right on it." Dwayne turned back to Violet, "Well, what do you say, will you join my team?" Violet was impressed with Dwayne and his sense of loyalty, so she answered with an optimistic smile, "It would be my honor, sir." She reached out and offered her hand, and they shook. Dwayne was very pleased and replied, "Great, welcome aboard." They continued talking and discussing the crime scene, and the details of what had taken place. Needless to say, there was a lot to talk about. Meanwhile, Henry had solicited the help of another FBI agent, and they were pondering what to do to get Violet's necklace. The entire lower half of Carlos was on the ground, surrounded in a pool of blood and entrails. Henry said out loud, "Man, somehow I wind up with all the crappy jobs." The other agent replied, "Oh yeah, it's grody, super grody." Minutes later, Dwayne's FBI helicopter was landing in a mostly empty parking lot, adjacent to a large department store. This store was commonly known to be open on New Year's Day, and not too far from the warehouse. After it landed, Sarah got out of the helicopter and walked quickly away, then went inside the store. She was just following her boss's orders, he said, no matter what it takes. Apparently, she was in pursuit of a pair of pants for Violet, the perfect excuse to go shopping in a helicopter.